Daily Mining Journal, May 23, 1864. The Great Flood in Denver. Denver, May 1, 1864, from the Denver Commonwealth. At about 30 minutes past 11 o'clock on Thursday night the 16th, the inhabitants of West Denver and those who have occupied with buildings uninterruptedly for several years, the immediate bed of Cherry Creek, were roused by a most terrible roar, a rushing and crashing noise, as if some mighty hurricane, accompanied by torrents of rain, which soon developed itself to be a huge flood in Cherry Creek, caused by 2 or 3 days' heavy consecutive rains at its head, on the great watershed known as the Divide, where the water runs off fast as from the roof of a house. When the flood was first discovered, it had entirely surrounded our building and was washing with wildest fury on every side, carrying upon its uneven surface masses of floodwood, houses, fences, gigantic cottonwood trees, and driving before its irresistible current huge boulders, which created a dull rumbling sound that rendered other sounds still more frightful. The first object selected by the element was the Methodist Episcopal Church at Larimer Street Bridge, which, together with the bridge, was hurled from its fastenings down the furious stream with a velocity worthy of Niagara, either above or below the falls. The blacksmith shop near the church immediately followed, and then a succession of fearful noises, of buildings continually falling, waves surging high in air, the sight of which, by the pale, clouded light of the moon, was so awfully grand that the imminent danger was forgotten for a moment, until some gigantic masses of wood, trees, and stones would come bounding against our office, causing the whole structure to tremble from its roof to its base, and in its stead filling us with utmost fear for the safety of our situations. Long and anxiously did all in the Commonwealth building watch the news office, hoping even against hope that it might withstand the fury of the waters. Light gleamed from its windows, showing that all were astir within. Hardly had those in this office exchanged opinions as to whether the building would be able to hold out, when the light disappeared, and shortly afterward, at 1:45, a loud crash came bounding over the water, and the Rocky Mountain News office was totally demolished, the occupants barely saving their lives. At 2:00, the water commenced to abate, and so low did it get, we found but little difficulty in walking to the Tremont House and other places. This, however, did not last long. It was plainly evident that the creek was again rising fast. Families in this vicinity, and indeed wherever the inundation had reached, availed themselves of this pause in the storm to move themselves and as much of their property as possible. Subsequent events proved how judicious was this step to many, for when they returned in the morning, the waters had not only carried off their houses, fences, and other improvements, but the lots with the rest. One of the most distressing of all the scenes which transpired during the night was that of a woman wading waist-deep in ice-cold water with children in her arms, in constant danger of being borne along with the rubbish, their screams and cries rendering the already dreadful night thrice more alarming. Many families were quartered in the upper room of this building, the compositors of this paper rendering them every assistance in their power. At 2:30 a.m., nearly all who were in danger had been removed to high ground, and what few were left behind were soon sought after by the gallant soldiers of the 1st Colorado Cavalry, on their horses, and many were the good deeds performed by them. One little boy was rescued by one of these brave fellows at the risk of his own life. We are indebted to a member of that regiment, whose name we do not know, for conveying us with our books and papers to Ferry Street, where we found comfortable quarters in Honorable Pierce's office. When day had dawned, many availed themselves of the liberty granted by Quartermaster Mullen to seek the roof of his building to behold the sight there spread out before them. It is beyond our capacity to describe what was there presented to our gaze. On every side, from the extreme bank of Cherry Creek on the east to the further bank of the Platte on the west, all was water. Front, Cherry, Ferry Streets had each a river of their own, aside from the one which followed the heretofore dry bed of Cherry Creek. Houses, trees, fences, cattle, hogs, chickens, wagons, barrels, boxes, baggage, household furniture, wagon beds, and indeed property of almost every description, was sailing at the rate of 20 miles or more an hour towards the Missouri River. We refer those who are curious to learn something of the picture to the photograph taken by Wakely at the time. Early in the morning, the inhabitants of East Denver were gathered in great numbers on the east bank of Cherry Creek, on Larimer Street, when they immediately opened communication with West Denver by means of paper upon which they had written, wrapped around a small-sized stone, and then cast over by those who had the power of forcing them across. Many dispatches were sent and received in this way, some of which we copy elsewhere. At 10 o'clock, word was received that the Platte was rising rapidly, and it was essential to the safety of residents in the Platte Bottom that they should immediately move to higher ground. There was another panic. Nearly all the families being deserted by the men were not suspecting any danger from that quarter, had gone to see how things were further uptown. The report of this new disaster soon spread over town, when a great stampede of men was seen in that direction, and in a few minutes a general transportation business was carried on. Then came the alarming word that William N. Byers and family were on an island in the Platte River, while the water was rising fast and furious about them. No time was taken for a comment on this latter sad report, but forthwith Colonel Shivington, on his horse, galloped to the place, where he had communication with Mr. Byers, who said he could hold out against another rise of 2 feet. Upon this information, Colonel Shivington hastily returned to town, where, in the course of 2 hours, he had a boat constructed, which was sent to the spot, and the whole family rescued. The whole number of lives lost cannot, at this time, be accurately ascertained, but there is little doubt that many were lost. Mr. C. Bruce Haynes, late Secretary of the Territorial Council, is among the drowned, his body having been found near the residence of James McNasser, some miles down the Platte River. Other bodies, we understand, have been seen lodged in tree branches and driftwood, which have not yet been brought off. Peter Fisher, who lives 1 mile up Cherry Creek, lost his boy, some 2 months over 4 years old. A Negro named Smith, with his wife and 5 children, were carried away, but through the heroic management and cool courage of Mrs. Smith, the entire family were saved. All honor to that brave woman. John Wall, who belongs to the Special Police Force, was carried away with the City Hall, and succeeded in lodging in a tree on an island some 3 miles from here. He has returned safe, but as to the number of prisoners who were confined there at the time, or of their fate, we are not at this writing advised. There is little doubt that Mr. Rosebaum, who formerly occupied a front room of the old Commonwealth building as a clothing store, is also drowned. The young man Shell, who clerked for F.A. Clark after meeting with innumerable adventures and hairbreadth escapes, was finally rescued and is now in the city. J.M. Veazey was carried off in his house, which, strange to say, traveled a mile or more right side up when he succeeded in gaining land. There are many other events of thrilling nature connected with this flood, which will be duly recorded hereafter. The loss of property is almost impossible to arrive at, from the fact that hundreds of ranches for miles on Cherry Creek, as well as up and down the Platte, aside from all other property in the city, being laid to waste. We have heard of the loss of 4,500 head of sheep and a large number of cattle. The loss of the news company, Tilton, F.A. Clark, the city, in City Hall, bridges, etc., General Bowen, McKee, Metz, Hunt, Charles, Emmy Church, American House, not total, all these are not a drop in the bucket to what will be shown in a few days. This flood has called to mind one fact, which it is well enough for us to state here. In the summer of 1861, we were one of Lieutenant Berthoud's exploring party to and from Salt Lake City. Major James Bridger, one of the most thorough practical explorers in the West, was guide on the trip. During a general conversation on the subject of property in and about Denver, of which he had some, he proposed selling very cheap for the reason that it was in the bottom. The entire party thought him very foolish, whereupon the old man returned the compliment in no very mild terms to think that we should set up our opinion against his. And then he proceeded to tell us that many years ago, we forgot how many, while on a journey from Fort Laramie to some other point, he found the entire bottom of Cherry Creek and Platte River covered between the extreme bluffs of the two, which compelled him to remain on the opposite side of the Platte from this city 9 days before he was able to effect a crossing. The respect the whole party entertained for the major was not discredited to his face, but everyone had their own opinion, which was that the old man was indulging in an old mountaineer's fib. We are, for our own part, willing to publicly acknowledge that the major was telling the truth. Bijou, Kiowa, Plum, and Sand Creeks are reported as being equally furious with Cherry Creek. If this is the fact, no one can imagine what the ultimate loss along the whole length of the Platte and those tributaries may be.